One, two, three. Witness registered. Let's see if you get any play up here.
State and Federal Affairs Subcommittee on Governmental Reorganization, meeting Wednesday, February 24th, 1:30 p.m. in room 20.
Hey, Governmental Reorganization of Colorado, clerk of Colorado.
Johnson. Johnson.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Madison.
Here.
Engel.
Here. We're here today for a public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution Number 7. Our first witness is the Honorable Clay Meyer, Secretary of State.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I support very strongly Senate Joint Resolution 7, both as Secretary of State and as a private citizen. This bill is practically identical to another joint resolution introduced on the House side, H.A.R. 9, but the one you're considering today has already been adopted by the state Senate. It would be my hope that the supporters of both bills would unite on this measure and, through it, give Oregonians another opportunity to vote in May of 1972 to lower the voting age to 18 for both state and local elections, and thus make uniform one voting age for all elections in Oregon. As co-chairman last spring, May of 70, of the Go 19 effort, the prime objection that I heard to lowering the voting age was that responsibilities should go along with the right to vote. Hopefully, this legislature will also lower the age of majority. Our young adults would then, if these other bills have been adopted, have an opportunity to evidence their maturity and their judgment and their responsibility over the next year, demonstrate that to the satisfaction of all of the Oregon electorate before we would again vote in May of 72 on a lowered voting age. Assuming that such responsibilities would precede the vote of the people next year on SJR 7, then we would have met the most valid criticism against lowering the voting age. Casting important votes for President, United States Senator, and Congress certainly requires as much judgment and maturity as voting for Governor or Secretary of State or other state and local office. I have testified in past legislative sessions before various committees, giving both my official as well as my personal reasons for lowering the voting age to 18, and I reaffirm that position and be more than pleased to answer any questions on such past testimony. The fiscal impact will be, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, very limited in Oregon on this bill. If anything, this bill will, however, save money by removing the need for the counties, as evidenced by House Bills 1149 and 1150, overwhelmingly approved by your House yesterday, removing any need to set up an integrated dual system of registration and voting in Oregon and continuing such a dual system. Most of the expense will be borne by the counties on that integrated dual system through the necessity, of course, of having to have extra supplies, materials, ballots, and so forth. As far as the state is concerned, we see no appreciable fiscal impact one way or the other. Our major and really only cost will be the publishing of the voters' pamphlets, and I assume this would be necessary whether it's a national office only or whether it's across the board, as SJR 7 would provide. Again, I'd restate my very strong personal as well as official support of SJR 7.
Are there questions by members of the committee?
And Mr. Secretary, would you reflect on the significance of the 19-year-old defeat in the last election?
Be more than pleased to. Having given probably 20 to 30 talks or more for Go 19 as one of the four co-chairmen of the older adults working with the young adults on the bill, we found objections, some with validity, some emotional, some I might prefer not to identify the objection. But at the time, I think you had just had a Portland State disturbance that caused some reaction, and you had had, as I say, this very strong feeling on the part of many that you have a need for responsibilities going hand in hand with rights. Why are we voting? And I felt this was the most legitimate objection. Why are we voting just on lowering the voting age and not on being civilly responsible for your actions? If a young adult is responsible for his criminal actions at age 18, why not be civilly responsible and have those other responsibilities and rights as well? And certainly the state of Washington, which came much closer to passing in the same year, had used the other approach. They had reduced the age of majority first and then voted on the 19-year-old vote. That change first, reducing the age of majority, coupled with the Supreme Court decision of December 21st, the federal Supreme Court, stating that we would have an 18-year-old vote for national office, gives us, of course, a very expensive dual system in many states. Hopefully, we in Oregon can avoid that expense, regardless of which system we go, by having a very simple, inexpensive, integrated dual registration system that your House has already approved. But certainly, there will still be confusion on the part of many when they can vote for only a portion of the ballot and not the balance. And many registered electors that I've talked to in Oregon have indicated they are willing to reconsider a vote on lowering the voting age in view of that Supreme Court decision.
Mr. Secretary, what is your definition of national officers?
My definition of national officers is whatever the United States Supreme Court meant in their 180-page decision, which was never rendered in form, in the final form of a judgment, and which I have just finished discussing since 11 o'clock this morning with the state chairman and legislative chairman of the Democratic Party, the legislative chairman and a county chairman of the Republican Party, and a representative of the League of Women Voters, and a representative of the Attorney General's office. And as we've gone through this, I think we've come to the conclusion that probably only if there's a court test will we ever know whether or not it's applied to national committee men or delegates or precinct committee people. There has been, for example, in the state of Washington, and I believe it was an Oregon federal jurist, Ted Goodwin, who handed down the decision that says that really you've got to apply it all the way from precinct committeeman up. The party process, which results in the selection of delegates to a national convention, is a part of the national office election system. So my personal feeling is that it ought to apply to precinct committeemen, national committeemen and women, delegate to the national convention. The bills we have introduced, however, 1149 and 1150, limit themselves to public office. And should there be a need for legislation in the party area for party office, then both political parties and our office are agreed to support legislation across the board for these other public offices, party offices. I am absolutely convinced that the Supreme Court meant president, senator, and congressman. In my own mind, I'm also convinced that it means party office, but I can't find that explicitly stated in the decision.
Is the primary a national election?
When Congress first passed the law, they, I believe, included the word primary to, as well as general, and I know the court referred to primary elections. So the nominating process for those national offices would obviously then be a national election in that sense.
After the people so soundly defeated this vote in the last election, my question is probably one that's been asked before when this was testified before Senate committee, but what kind of a reaction do you think that the people are going to have in this state about voting upon this again after the Supreme Court has said you will be able to vote in national elections, which was just absolutely contradictory to the way the people of this state felt? That's a question I have in my mind. Would you be willing to predict at this time how the people are going to accept this again?
I would agree, Representative Johnson, that you have some kickback to the Supreme Court decision, because if my own mail and phone calls were any evidence why the Secretary of State of Oregon was personally responsible for the United States Supreme Court decision, and people who said, why are you saying you're going to have laws passed to arrange for the registration and voting of 18-year-olds? Well, obviously, we have to have such laws, because we have to have provision for 18-year-old voting in national office elections, whether or not we lower the state voting age. But the overwhelming majority of responsible Oregonians with whom I have talked, who voted no last May, concur that this is a more mature adult generation, physically, educationally, in every other respect, than prior generations, that they had in many cases not considered the fact that when you have a 21-year vote, it means many times waiting until age 25 to vote for a president, because you only get to vote once every 4 years. And if your birthday fell, as mine did, a week after a presidential primary, I had to wait until the month in which I was 25 to cast my first vote in a presidential primary. And they agree that's too long. And as they've looked at the others, the key argument from even the most vocal opponent has been, why have rights without responsibilities? And that's why I did in my testimony push for the other bills, reducing the age of majority. Because I think if this mature, younger generation, 95% to 98% of whom are very responsible, have an opportunity to demonstrate their responsibility for a year, then I would hazard a guess that we would have a better than average chance of adopting this in May of 72, even though we lost substantially in May of 70.
I can't really argue with what you say. I supported the 19-year-old vote, but I have to justify in my own mind as an elected representative of 95,000 people in Jackson County who also voted this down, whether this is going to be a good thing or not. And I'm not quite sure what kind of an effect this is going to have on the people. And that's the question that I want answered in my own mind.
I might add that you had in your county the one city in Oregon that came closest to passing the 19-year-old vote. The city of Ashland was within 5 or 10 votes. And that was because they had a very active Go 19 group, and they demonstrated their maturity and responsibility. And very thoughtful community came very close to approving it last time, even without the responsibilities preceding the rights.
If there are no more questions, thank you very much, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Our next witness is Attorney General Lee Johnson.
Chairman, members of the committee, I appear in support of SJR 7. First and foremost, I believe that the franchise should be extended to those citizens between 18 and 21. They have consistently demonstrated the mental and emotional maturity to responsibly exercise the vote. Indeed, every objective study of voter attitudes indicates that 18 to 21-year-olds have much the same views as their elders. Unfortunately, popular impression is distorted by the violent rhetoric of a small minority. I believe we must accept the fact that there is a generation gap, and if we are going to close that gap, we must give the young a piece of the action. In light of the Supreme Court's decision in Oregon versus Mitchell, the reasons for passing SJR 7 are even more compelling. The purpose of that suit was twofold. First, to settle a vital constitutional issue, and secondly, to bring about certainty in the election process. The principal constitutional issue was resolved, and the state-federal relationship was preserved. I might just mention in conjunction with that, because I don't think many people really understood what the principle of law that was involved in that case, but I think Justice Black basically stated what was at stake, that if the government's position that was asserted in that case, and which was essentially adopted by Justice Brennan, was followed, this is what Justice Black concludes. If carried to its logical conclusion, would under the guise of ensuring equal protection blot out all state power, leaving the 50 states little more than impotent figureheads. Unfortunately, however, the court, by distinguishing between state and national elections, has created more questions than it answered. For example, what is a national election? Does it include a national committeeman, delegates to a national convention, or precinct committeeman? My office is presently trying to answer these questions, but our reply can only be an educated guess. The nation's legal scholars were betting both ways in Oregon versus Mitchell, and probably would be doing the same on these questions. These may seem like insignificant problems, but consider the situation where a nominee of either major political party is chosen in a convention by a small majority. Is that person the nominee of his party if the delegates from Oregon were illegally chosen? It is a cardinal principle of election law that there must be certainty in the results. Oregon versus Mitchell leaves only uncertainty. I believe Congress could and should resolve this uncertainty, but I doubt whether Congress will. SJR 7 undoubtedly would have a greater chance of ultimate passage if a less coercive atmosphere existed. However, I have faith that the people of Oregon will judge SJR 7 on its merits and will see the wisdom of extending the right to the vote to those persons between 18 and 21. Mr. Chairman, I might just elaborate some by making some comments about Oregon versus Mitchell that might give you some useful background. One of the interesting things about that case was that no time in the argument, during the oral argument, except upon one question directed to me by Justice Black, and at no time in the briefs of either the government or the state of Oregon, except for one footnote in the government's brief, was the issue discussed of whether there was a distinction between national and state elections. Congress had premised this statute on the 14th Amendment, and the government had based its whole argument on the 14th Amendment. So in effect, the court did decide on an issue that was not argued before. Secondly, we have a great problem in interpreting the decision because there is no majority opinion. Four judges took the view that Congress has the power to prescribe the 18-year-old vote in all elections. Four judges took the view that Congress did not have the power to prescribe the 18-year-old vote in either state or national elections. And Justice Black took the middle ground and concluded that they did have the power in national elections, but not in state and local elections. So really, Justice Black's opinion was the swing vote, but it is really merely the opinion of one justice, and cannot be regarded as an opinion of the court. I would make one other comment, is you may wish to amend SJR 7, because we do have another problem that's raised under the Voting Rights Act of 1970 concerning the residency requirement in presidential elections. Under that, and you have already, I think it's House Bill 1145, the House has passed enabling legislation, which in effect does permit a noun resident of Oregon to vote in Oregon. It is a noun resident who has lived here within 30 days moves out of the state and is disqualified from voting in his new state. He is, under the federal statute, of course, entitled to vote in this state if he was previously registered here. Under our Constitution, and the language is in subsection B of section 2, the requirement is that only persons who are residents immediately prior to the election. You may wish to change this. I don't think that it's necessary because, regardless of the Oregon Constitution, the federal law is supreme in this area. I'd be glad to answer any of your questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Johnson, I missed the first minute of your testimony, and I'm sorry, but if you touched on this, fine. In your opinion, or if you have an opinion, did you get into the area of what effect that this might have on party structure within the state?
Well, here is the problem. What is a national election? Let me start out this way. First, the Congressional Act, of course, applies to all elections, state, local, and national. And so the court merely struck down that portion of the act that applied to state and local elections and basically said that the act is constitutional as to Congress's power over national elections. So we must assume that it's the broadest possible power that Congress has to exercise in the field of voting rights. The problem with a national election, of course, is your nominating conventions. I am of the tentative opinion, I'm reasonably certain that this is the way we are going to decide on this question. We are having some internal arguments within the office, but I think we've about resolved them. Delegates to a national convention, 18-year-olds would be qualified. Secondly, your national committeeman, because he is automatically a delegate to the national convention, he likewise would be qualified. Then thirdly comes the problem of your precinct committeeman. Under our present law, the state chairman and the state vice chairman is a member of the delegation. Therefore, they are selected by the respective county chairman, who are in turn selected by the precinct committeeman. So, in effect, you are affecting the process of the national selection of the national delegates. So I think we'd probably have to conclude that the law should apply to precinct committeemen. Let me mention one other problem that comes up, is you're going to have a problem of defining who are qualified electors. Suppose you have a petition to put a man on the ticket as an independent, as a candidate for Congress. Who is a qualified elector that can sign that petition? He's not actually voting. He is merely signing the petition to get him on the ballot.
Do not central committees also select electors, I'm not sure of the word, to select candidates for Congress in case of a death?
Right. The Wendell Wyatt situation, they select, it's a committee in case of a death of a candidate for congressional office. And we had that situation occur when Wendell Wyatt was first nominated.
Are there any, Pat? If you can't tell me what a national election is, maybe you can tell me what a state and local election is.
Well, I think I can tell you what a national election is. It's any election that has to do with the selection of your congressman or your senator or the U.S. president. And I think the only logical route you can go is that anything that would affect their election is part of the national election machinery. I must admit, I can't say for certain because I don't really know what the court intended.
Mr. Chairman. Then the election of governor would also apply because the governor would appoint a senator in the case of death of...
Well, I don't think that's an election there. I think there you could probably draw a distinction. Because he is not an elected... The senator is not an elected official.
Mr. Johnson, do you care to comment on the other responsibilities? There is a bill in the House which says that if this is approved by the people, the young people in this age group would also receive majority responsibilities, drawing contracts, sitting on juries, buying liquor, so forth.
I strongly endorse the idea. I think it should pass regardless of whether SJR 7 passed, frankly.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. We appreciate you coming. Representative Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was one of those who introduced a proposed amendment in the last session of the legislature to lower the voting age to 18. And in this session, again, I introduced House Joint Resolution 9, which is identical to Senate Joint Resolution 7. I'm certainly pleased the Senate acted so quickly and so favorably upon it, and I hope that that the House will do likewise, and Senate Joint Resolution number 7 will be adopted so that the question of the 18-year-old vote will be placed upon the ballot again. I've also introduced House Bill 1162, which would lower the age of majority to 18. It does not, Mr. Chairman, however, extend to other age limits having to do with the 18-year-old or the 21-year-old, such as the drinking privilege. And those, I believe, will be in some other bills. But the age of majority refers only to legal responsibilities for one's action and one's business. Don't think at this point there is any particular reason for reviewing all of the reasons why the vote should be lowered, extended 18. I think we're all familiar with one of the things which has changed the situation materially since the last election, and that is the fact that because of federal legislation and the Supreme Court decision, unless the state lowers the voting age to 18, we will have a dual a voting requirement with the consequent confusions and additional costs and difficulties, and the Attorney General has made some of those clear, as well as the Secretary of State. But I've been interested in reviewing some of the arguments for and against the 18-year-old vote, and I was interested, therefore, in looking through this rather lengthy document, which is the hearings before the Subcommittee on Constitutional Amendments of the Committee on the Judiciary of the United States Senate, which is the verbatim reports of the various hearings and other materials filed in connection with the hearings which preceded the federal election. I say that I don't need to go into the arguments extensively because I notice one of the witnesses you're going to have this morning is a young Oregonian by the name of Earl Blumenauer, who was also one of the witnesses before the Senate committee, and his testimony, which is excellent, is included in this document. But I do think that there are three principal, or however you divide them, three or four principal reasons why the 18-year-old should get the vote. And I'd just like to summarize those briefly. It seems to me that the first of these rests upon the assertion that the age of 18 is just as good an arbitrary age as any other for establishing a degree of maturity which should be represented in our voting population. Certainly, there are many evidences in our society of the fact that not only sociologically and psychologically do people become mature at an earlier chronological age, but actually there's interesting medical sociological evidence that they become mature physically at an earlier age, if that has any relevance to voting at all. Certainly we know that there is a much higher level of educational preparation for a knowledge of the problems of government and of the world, as well as knowledge of physics and chemistry, than there has been in the past. And we are quite aware also of some of the many responsibilities that young people of this age have to share. We know, for instance, that more than 30% of the young men serving in Vietnam are under the age of 21. We know that of those who've died in Vietnam, more than 19,000 of them, almost 50% of the deaths, were deaths of young men under the age of 21. One of the things that concerns many people about extending the vote to the 18-year-old should instead make us realize the importance of extending the vote to this younger group, and that is the tremendous increased awareness of social and political questions of people of this age. And this lack of apathy itself, I think, should be an argument in favor of extending the vote to these people. But some of the most persuasive arguments to me of picking this particular age have to do with its coincidence with maturity and its coincidence with departure from formal education for many of these young people. The statistics indicate that the lowest percentage of the population who vote and who are now enfranchised are people between the ages of about 21 and 30. And the explanation of this may very well be that it takes a little while for people who, as adults, between the age and 21, were not permitted to vote. It takes a little while for them to get back into the stream, or to get into the stream of politics and start voting. Now, the converse has been discovered to be true in Kentucky, for instance, and Georgia, in which some of the highest percentage of voting in those states is represented by people between the age of 21 and 30, indicating, seemingly, that the fact that these young people at the age of 18 and 19 were encouraged to be actively interested in politics, to actually vote, tended to establish patterns of voting which caused them, as young people between 21 and 30, to actually have a better voting record than older people. Certainly the need, it seems to me, in our society for a representative voice for young people is important. And I think that the testimony of S.I. Hayakawa, well known in circles having to do with youth and the problems of youth, is important. And his testimony before the Senate committee was as follows: lowering of voting age is just one of the many measures that are necessary to involve young men and women from 18 years onward more and more into the life of government, of business, of the world of work in general, so that they have decisions to make that count in that world. And by the way, incidentally, Dr. Hayakawa goes on to mention, to give his, I would say, expert testimony as to the irrationality of those who would feel that the voting age should not be lowered because of some of the activities that have gone on in some of the campuses. And he corroborates the statements of Dr. Menninger of the commission to investigate the causes of violence, that what we are indicting the young people for is the actions of a very small group. Indeed, Dr. Hayakawa points out the fact that day after day, a tremendous array of constructive educational activities in the classroom, in the workshops and so forth, were going on at San Francisco State. And yet, even though he actually called the TV studios and said, "Won't you come out and take some pictures of the educational activities that were going on here?" they wouldn't. They would only show up at the noon demonstrations on the campus. And he went on to indicate that of the people who were arrested in these disturbances, 700 or so students and non-students were arrested. An enormous number of leaders were from the 24 to 30 age group. And the oldest arrestee was a professor who is 48. He suggests that chronological age has nothing to do necessarily with political or civic maturity. So, Mr. Chairman, I hope that it will be recognized that there is a full justification for submitting this question to the people, the voters of the state of Oregon, again. They always have an opportunity to reject it again if they wish, and I think that this is inherent in our system. But there are certainly three reasons that it may very well have changed the situation. Well, two reasons have changed. One is, I think it's inherently right and desirable and good. That's one good reason for submitting it. A second reason, I believe, is that perhaps we have to recognize that there were some other events which occurred 2 years ago which may have influenced the vote, and for that reason, in a different situation, in one in which we all recognize little time to reflect, often changes our opinion on things. For that reason, I think it should be submitted. And finally, obviously, it should be submitted because the action of Congress has certainly confused the picture. We can't change that, but we can resolve the situation by making our laws consistent with the federal law.
Thank you, Representative Roberts. Are there questions?
Representative Roberts, you've made some excellent points, and I think excellent points for the rationale of the congressional action. However, there's one point, and many of the constituents that I've talked to are concerned with, and that is lowering the age to those who are non-property holders, non-property owners, and the economic impact that might possibly have on because we're so dependent on property taxes for local government, the economic impact that might have. Now, I'd like to know if you have concerned yourself with this aspect as much as you have with the other aspects.
Well, all I can say is that in the testimony which is given upon the effect of the lowering the voting age, which took place some years ago in both Georgia and Kentucky, there has been no evidence submitted in any of these hearings which would indicate that there was any such undesirable effect. Now, there may have been such an effect, but the absence of the testimony in the midst of all of this controversy might indicate that it is probably negligible. And I think that I would say, secondly, that we do not have a property tax qualification for any other class of citizens in Oregon, so it hardly seems proper to apply that test to 18, 19, and 20-year-olds.
Thank you very much. Our next witness will be Representative Rich Kennedy of the committee.
Mr. Chairman and fellow members, I might begin by saying that I have in the past supported the premise that 18-year-olds should be permitted to vote in Oregon, and but my testimony today does not really relate to that question. I hope that my argument is at least logical. I don't know, not being a lawyer, whether it is as legal as it should be, but it is my contention that the United States Supreme Court, in its action permitting 18-year-olds to vote in national elections, has invalidated Section 2, Article 2 of Section 2 of the Oregon Constitution. If you look at the article, we find in Section A provides that the voting age is 21. This has been ruled unconstitutional as far as national elections are concerned. If you look at Section B, as Mr. Attorney General Johnson pointed out, we have a residency requirement of 6 months. This is, I think, clearly unconstitutional as far as national elections are concerned, and probably unconstitutional so far as state and local elections are concerned. If you look at Section D, you find that we have a provision that an individual must be able to read and write the English language. This is clearly unconstitutional so far as national elections are concerned, and I'm sure unconstitutional so far as state and local elections are concerned. So it is my contention, Mr. Chairman, that the state of Oregon right now has no voting age requirement, and that this committee does not have to pass Senate Joint Resolution Number 7, does not have to refer anything to the people of the state of Oregon, but merely has to pass a statute setting a voting age in Oregon. Would be my suggestion, Mr. Chairman, that this committee consider seriously submitting to the Attorney General opinion as to the validity of my argument. And that concludes my testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kennedy. Are there any questions of Mr. Kennedy?
You make, I think, a good point, Mr. Kennedy. However, I would like to ask, and I'm sure that as a member of the committee, you're concerned, as well as all of us, the importance and the significance of the defeat of the 19-year-old vote by the people of Oregon. And would you have any comments to make in that area?
Well, yes, I would. I could comment on it. As you know, I'm in the public opinion research business, and I did and have for the past 4 or 5 years run a number of surveys on this question of the of lowering the voting age. I would say, generally speaking, historically, Oregon opinion has been unsure as to how they felt about it. With several months before the actual vote occurred, the 18-year-old or the 19-year-old position had a slight edge over the no vote with a rather large undecided vote. I think that the the events that occurred on the campuses in Oregon immediately preceding that election defeated Go 19. I think that as in many kinds of political situations, that events affect voting behavior. And I think this was the events on campus dramatically affected how Oregon voters voted on this issue. And I think that things might change dramatically depending on events in the future.
Have there been any studies made recently as to the feeling, the difference in opinion that may be present?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge in Oregon. There have been national surveys that have been taken, but I'm not. I have them in my files, but I'll be happy to give you the information. But I don't really recall what the national figures are at the present time.
Mr. Kennedy, if in fact your opinion is accurate relative to the Oregon Constitution, would you also hold then that any election we might hold in the future without such a statute would be unconstitutional?
It perhaps could, Mr. Chairman.
And anybody 5 years up or anybody who can make an X would be eligible to vote?
I don't believe Oregon has a voting age requirement presently.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. This is not a call of the House, ladies and gentlemen. We have a few representatives who have asked to testify on this matter, and I'd like to get them in before we get the other people, because most of them have other committees to go to. I'd like to call on Jack Owens.
Representative Craig, Chairman, members of the committee, I would just like to add briefly to what Representative Kennedy has said. The interpretation is a little bit different, but the idea is that because of the Supreme Court decision, that this is mostly a sort of a moot point. And as you're aware, as members of the election law reform, we've passed through measures, was through the House 1149 and 50, to make it possible for the 18-year-olds to vote and register, but there is a small impact as far as costing money and time and effort, and I feel that the people of Oregon and people that I've talked to realize the situation has changed, and I'm sure that if called upon to vote upon this would make note of that and actually go all the way as far as having 18 to 21-year-old voters take part fully in elections in the state of Oregon. And I would certainly support placing this upon the ballot at the next possible election.
Thank you, Mr. Craig. Pat? You say, whoops. You say you support Mr. Kennedy's contention, and you also say you support placing this on the ballot. Is this compatible?
No, the contention I was suggesting was the fact that that we already have this, not his legal suggestion, but the suggestion made by that these voters are already here, or will be, as soon as we get them registered and they start voting.
Thank you, Mr. Craig.
Yes.
Our next witness will be Earl Blumenauer.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Earl Blumenauer. I'm a graduate student and part-time employee of Portland State University. I recently spent a year as chairman of the campaign to lower Oregon's voting age. In that capacity, I had the opportunity, I'll say the privilege, to discuss this issue with over 25,000 Oregonians. I engaged in dozens of the most spirited debates imaginable, as possibly Mr. Chairman will remember. And became acquainted with most of the literature pertaining to lowering the voting age. I'll humbly offer some comments here as a semi-expert in this field. I'm not going to waste your time, however, debating the merit of the issue of lowering the voting age. Those who have not yet been convinced of the true abilities and potential of our youthful citizens are not going to be persuaded by what I'll say in the next 5 minutes, the next 5 hours. The only real way to become convinced is to do what I did, and that was to spend a great deal of time with Oregonians of all ages, all over this state, those who agreed and disagreed with the issue, and have an opportunity to consider this in balance. I think this evidence is most convincing, and I think is a compelling argument for lowering the voting age. I know of no one who went through the experience that I did who did not walk away more firmly in their resolve that the voting age ought to be lowered. However, I'd like to address my comments to the issue that's been raised several times. Why should we have another election so soon after the defeat of ballot measure 5 last spring? Well, first of all, it's already been alluded to the fact we're going to have a great deal of needless waste and confusion by the dual registration and voting system required by the recent congressional and Supreme Court decision. I'm not going to labor that point any further. I think it's important, however, to note that at this point in time, we have a mandate from our citizens to try and cut down needless governmental expenditure and to cut through bureaucratic red tape whenever possible. Secondly, I'd argue the necessity to shift away the federal emphasis that most of our citizens have. The one thing I've been convinced of in my travels around the state, my debates, the work we did on lowering the voting age, was that on the state and local level is where it's at. But all too few of our citizens, whether they're young or old, are concerned with state and local government. Consider for a moment the impact of allowing young people at the, some argue, the height of their consciousness as far as governmental affairs are concerned, many of them right out of high school or in their first year or two of college, for the first 3 or 4 years of this awareness, all they're going to be able to legitimately be concerned with at the ballot box are federal affairs. I think that's tragic. We need to concentrate their attention on the local and the state level. That's where we need their energy. That's where we need their criticism. That's where we need their work. Not on the federal level, where they're going to have minimum impact at best. Finally, I'm prepared to argue that we need another campaign like we had last year. I think that the issues that were raised in that campaign, that is to say, the nature of our democracy, the role of an individual in that democracy, and the role of youth in our society, are crucial issues still. If anything, they're more in a state of flux. They're more up in the air. They need further debate, discussion, study, and refinement. I'm convinced that that was the most important byproduct of that campaign. I think it was healthy, but I don't think it's been resolved to anybody's satisfaction. I think we need to continue to do more work forming public opinion in the crucible of a campaign to lower the voting age. I think that's the most effective vehicle to analyze the nature of our democracy, the role of young people. I think we can do better as a state and as a nation than we did last spring. I wish, if you haven't had an opportunity to do so, you'd go back and look at the front pages of a national newspaper, the New York Times, for example, or your own paper in Corvallis. You'll find that the first part of 1970 was a tortured period. I think we can all do better, whether we're talking about young people, whether we're talking about voters, whether we're talking about people in business, labor, or government. 1970 was a pretty bitter year, and I would hate to think that that is a measure of this country, the caliber of the people in Oregon, their temper, their interests. It's one catastrophe, one crisis, continuing argument between grown men, between children in some respects, after another. I don't think that that was a very good laboratory in which to test public opinion, Mr. Kennedy, that period last spring. I think we ought to try it again when hopefully men's tempers have died down a little bit. Finally, the last reason is simply for the growth of the individuals who were involved in that campaign. At the time, I thought that the time, the money, the demands of my family that I invested were rather costly. In retrospect, they're the most valuable investments that I've ever made. Understanding the political system, the men who make that system work, the tremendous citizenry of the state of Oregon, I think was one of the most valuable experiences for myself. And you can, I think most of you gentlemen in your own area know of young people who shared that same experience. I won't name names, but I'm sure each of you can think of the young people who headed the campaign in your area. And if you were at all close to it, you watched those young people mature and grow and the people around them. I think that was healthy. I think there is a tremendous responsibility involved with bringing about change. I think I understand that as never before, after having a chance to debate people on this issue and to find out the variety of feelings that they had. I think more young people ought to become acquainted with the responsibility of bringing about change. You gentlemen, by an affirmative action on this bill, hopefully by an affirmative action by the House of Representatives, are not going to lower the voting age. What you're going to do is allow the young people of the state of Oregon another chance to sell their case and thereby to learn the burden of bringing about change. I think that this is a healthy activity for us to approach at this point in time.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. Are there questions of Mr. Blumenauer?
Just one, an excellent presentation. I'd like to know, you have worked with the young people and through the last campaign. How do you feel about lowering the age of majority?
I am 100% personally committed to lowering the age of majority. I think of it I have mixed feelings about that. I don't know really whether it's a right or a privilege, but I think most of the thousands of young people that I talked with considered it important, and they wanted it right along with lowering the voting age. I don't think you'd have any objection from Oregon youth were you to act affirmatively in this area, and I hope you do, regardless of whether or not you decide to take affirmative action on this bill.
Did you testify in front of the Senate when they heard this bill?
Yes, sir.
Just recently, did you?
No, not the United States Senate or...
No, here. This, our Senate.
Not our Senate.
Okay. Would you be willing
no
to go
slam
out?
Intended. Huh? No slam intended.
No, I was just curious. Would you be willing to go out and work as hard again, you yourself, and organize forces and so forth as you did last time? You think you'd have as much backing?
Representative Johnson, I have mixed feelings about that. I would like to. I would like nothing better to go out than work on this campaign another time around. But I feel very strongly that the opportunity to structure this campaign, to carry the banner, to organize young people, people from business, from labor, and from both political parties, ought to be shared. I would rather spend my time working with another group of young people, a new group of young people, people who haven't had this experience before, to assume the leadership in the direction of a campaign. But I think there is just as much support in labor, in business, in the political parties. In fact, my readings are that it's increased.
Well, the efforts that you put forth this last election, needless to say, were, if bombastic's a fair word, I'll use it, because the efforts that were made were tremendous. And the people that were in my home area were tremendous. And as Clay Meyer stated, in one of the cities in my county, it came within 5 votes of passing, and that's true, it did. But if that same effort were put together again, and these people went out and worked as hard as they did last time, I don't know that it wouldn't pass. The thing I would hate to see is that no effort would be made to go out
and
work for it.
But I don't think it's whether I've heard it said it's not whether you win or lose, you know.
No.
And I think that to a large extent that's true. However, I am confident of that it would be acted on affirmatively.
Earl, not apropos of your testimony, but we had previous testimony relative to voting statistics in Kentucky and Georgia. Do you happen to remember offhand the percentages?
Yes, sir. The latest information, I've had that updated. It indicated the Bureau of Census in their reports that they've gathered, the latest reports they've gathered indicate that it's approximately 1/3 of the young people in the group 18 to 21 have exercised the vote. But I would like to clarify that percentage if I may, Mr. Chairman. I think there's a logical reason for it. The Gallup Opinion Survey of June 1968 analyzed this aspect, why young people in general had a lower rate of participation. They concluded that the overwhelming reason for the low level of participation of citizens under 30 was not a lack of interest, but rather the mobility of these young people. They're the most mobile group in America. They concluded if restrictive residency requirements were removed, that they would have a percentage of participation equal to, if not better than, the average citizen. And the Supreme Court decision that was handed down in December carried with it provisos that there was going to be a great liberalization of residency requirements. So I think it's going to be a whole new ball game determining voter participation in this age group.
I was only trying to verify my own memory, and I thought you would have it, and I didn't want to question the witness because I wasn't sure of my own grounds.
But it is 1/3.
Okay, are there any more questions?
How old are you?
22.
So you were 20 when you were working on that?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Earl. The next gentleman makes his mark a lot better than he does his spelling his last name. Mike Homer or Mike somebody.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Homer is will be back in a moment.
All right. Well, It is Homer, though.
Yes.
Thank you. Des, C-O-N-N-A-L-L. Is he also out? Bruce Ettinger?
My name is Bruce Ettinger. I'm a junior, a frustrated major in political science at Lewis and Clark College, I think. And I, too, was active under Earl, with Earl, in our ill-fated Go 19 battle last spring. The organization I'm with is a modest group known as the Vote 18 Coalition. Our initial purpose last November was to facilitate and encourage registration. We've worked very closely and productively, and gratefully, I might add, with the Secretary of State and his support last November when we were registering young people. We registered over 6,000 of them. We're still waiting, of course, to find out if those 6,000 young adults will have to re-register. I, too, am impressed by the confusion of the issue, and I hear each time it's discussed there are new confusions added to it. Following the Supreme Court decision, 18-year-olds, as we've already talked about, are eligible only to vote in federal elections. In effect, I think we're telling our young people that they're able to choose their president, they're able to decide issues of war and peace, but they're not able to elect their governor, their state legislator, or their city commissioner. To me, while it may make legal sense to five members of the Supreme Court to have that kind of a distinction, I don't think it makes much political sense. I think, secondly, the distinction of having this 18 to 21-year-old age group here designated as semi-citizens is unjustified because it denies us a voice in matters of vital concern. It was Abraham Lincoln who told us that those who share the burdens of government ought to be able to share in its decision-making as well. Young adults do carry most adult responsibilities, as has been pointed out in this hearing and in other hearings, of course, in the Senate hearings that we've already alluded to. They paid over $30 million in taxes, not last year, but the year before. This was a statistic that we got from the State Tax Commission and from an economist at the University of Oregon. They're subject to adult court. Over half of our casualties in our current war in Indochina are this age group. Most adult responsibilities, and of course, all of the outputs of government, whether you want to talk about traffic fines that I'm required to pay, whether you want to talk about pollution laws, all of these outputs of government affect young people. And all we're really saying in the lowering of the voting age is that this age group now will have a chance to share in constructive decision-making. The administrative confusion is, to me, the third reason for lowering the voting age. It seems to me, as we've talked about it, it's the first time that we've ever seen Congress or the Supreme Court, make the distinction between a federal and a state citizen. And I really don't think that that's going to be a distinction that most young people are going to appreciate. You know, when we stop and think about it, as it's been alluded to already, the trend these days in terms of the revenue sharing proposal that I guess was considered just today in the House, we're trying to decentralize government. We're trying to involve citizens at that level where they can feel that their involvement is important, where they can feel the issues, because that's the level of government where there's most of the spending, most of the problems, and where they can actually see their representative and talk with him. And I think it would be very tragic to deny young people access to involvement at this level of government. I haven't kept track of my points, but I might suggest that maybe a fourth justification would be the fact that not only do we have young people eligible to vote in federal elections now, but last November, five new states joined the list. We now have 10 states where young people at 18 can vote, including the District of Columbia, in addition to those 10 states. We have Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia. The District of Columbia, they've already had an election with 18-year-olds voting for their first congressman. It seems to me then, as we look to the future, we've got young people all over the country able to vote in federal elections. In 10 states, the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, they can vote in local elections. And I can't figure out why young Oregonians shouldn't be in the list of full citizens. And so what we're really talking about in SJR 7, and I think it is important that it passes and passes substantially, is allowing young people not to vote in some elections, but in all elections, and not some young people in some states, but all young people in all states. I think that's what the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution talked about, and I think that's the justification for adoption of SJR 7. The latest polls, again, 2 or 3 months ago, Gallup took another poll, and it concluded the same thing that he's proven since 1950, and that is the majority of American people, this time 67%, favor a lowered voting age. The issue's been much discussed in Oregon, and I would only conclude by saying that, as Earl has pointed out, with all the polarization that's coming about, that has been coming about in the past, certainly a very significant step forward towards inviting young people into the political mainstream is a lowered voting age. That isn't the end of the road. There's a lot more we need to do, and there's a lot more we could do. But speaking for a few young people that I had a chance to work with in Go 19, speaking for the adults that have really helped us in our registration drive and will help us in our registration drive if the Senate approves the procedure you adopted yesterday, I think it's important that SJR 7 passes and that we invite young people to join our political system.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Lee?
Yeah.
One question I have, and it was relative too to the Go 19, so I presume it's even more relative now. The $30 million in taxes paid by the people in this age group, do you have any idea, is this a gross figure, and if so, how much of it was returned to them?
I believe that figure, as I pointed out, it came from a professor at the University of Oregon Economics. This was verified some time ago by the State Tax Commission. It included indirect tax. In other words, an awful lot of young people under 21, say, live in an apartment and pay property taxes through their rents. But I don't think, I think that's about $20 million of the $30 million. I think the other $10 million is in actual paid-out state and federal income taxes. And I think that was a two-year-old figure, so I think it's even grown. And of course, young people do pay the other taxes, and I'm sure you're aware, the gasoline taxes, probably even more than their share of those taxes. But again, I would echo the comments of Representative Roberts that we don't require others to pay taxes, and that I was merely using that statistic to point out that young people do pay their fair share.
Okay, thank you very much, Bruce. Has Mr. Homer returned?
My name is Mike Homer. I'm from Reynolds High School.
And, what high school? What high school?
Reynolds High School, which is located in Troutdale, Oregon, about 14 miles east of Portland. And I came here to Salem today just to represent Reynolds and to testify before the committee and tell you that we feel strongly that by lowering the voting age to 18, it'll give a new impetus to student involvement and youth involvement in local politics and state politics. At least in my personal opinion, I feel that a lot of times that the local officials and local representatives are dismayed at the apathy shown at the local level, and that this apathy will even be more prevalent among the youth unless, as Bruce pointed out, we tell the youth today or after this committee meets that state and local politics are indeed just as important as federal politics are, and that because they are just as important, that youth, if they're given the right to vote on the federal level, should have the right to vote on the local and state level. And I think that if you say this, then more youth are going to take state and local politics more seriously, and thus there's probably a greater possibility that there will be more involvement on the local and state level.
Thank you, Mike. Ed, Rich? You say we at Reynolds High School feel this. Did you have a poll or consensus, or how do you speak for we?
Well, I'm speaking more of the student house of representatives, which I'm president of our student body, Reynolds High School, and yes, the student house of representatives was polled and is in favor of this measure.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Desgood, is it Connell?
Connell.
Connell?
Members of the committee, I'm extremely pleased to know that youth such as me, who is only actually 16 years of age, has a voice in what's going on. And I think that it is essentially important that the 18-year-olds of today do have an opportunity to vote in not just federal elections, but in state and local elections as well. I'm not going to rehash the arguments as presented because they've been rehashed already by so many speakers. You know where they stand. I would like to point out, though, that I once said in a speech to the Optimist Club that the youth of today want evolution and not revolution. I sincerely believe that, gentlemen, and I think the most apt way that our youth can become involved is through the political process. And I think that this supposed generation gap that we do have can be bridged most aptly by allowing them to become involved in just exactly what is going on, and by allowing them as individuals to participate in the political process. Because you, as gentlemen who are responsive to the voters, are going to be responsive to 18-year-olds if you know that they're going to either be casting your vote, their vote for you, or somebody else. So in other words, you are going to become responsive to them. They're going to be where the action is. Once again, I stand strongly in favor of this kind of a proposal.
Mike, can you tell us where you're from?
My name is Des Connell, and I'm from Centennial.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your coming. Are there any questions of Des?
Thank
you, Des. We have one more witness, Mr. Luton, and he hasn't indicated whether he's for or against.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Irv Luton. I represent Weyerhaeuser Company in the lobby, and I reside at 401, where my office is in 401 Yonge Building in Portland. I want to make it clear that I'm speaking today not in behalf of Weyerhaeuser Company, but rather in behalf of myself as a citizen who campaigned for the 19-year-old vote. And I want to make a couple of points that I have not heard made thus far. I should explain that our company management did take a position, or rather adopted a policy of favoring the 19-year-old vote, and gave me permission to campaign for it. We have taken no position on this particular bill that is before you today as a company. So that's why I'm speaking as an individual. I'd like to make this point. Young people who are just graduating from high school, which is about at the age of 18, have received a lot of popular impressions from popular literature about politics. And they have a tendency to think of it in rather romantic terms, or maybe cynical terms, because they have read the popular literature, which perhaps presents a preponderance of critical comment about politics rather than favorable comment. At the same time, these young people have become concerned about problems in our country and problems locally. Now, it seems to me that this country would be far better off if we brought these young people into the political stream at this time. Because right at this point, they're about to go off to college, where they have a new kind of interest. They have new responsibilities. They are leaving the area in which they have resided for period in college. And at this particular time, I think, they would be most receptive to learning about the political process. And if you delay that until they're 21, in my opinion, you increase apathy and cynicism about the political system, because they have had that many more years to go on without really participating and still receiving all of these popular concepts about the political system. which are, I think, slanted toward the cynical approach. So if you bring them in just when they're 18, I think you improve a great deal the attitudes of young people toward the political system. And then I think Mr. Blumenauer made a very telling point that I would like to emphasize. Because what he said was that when these young people get into the political system and they take part in a campaign, they become a part of the overall life of their community and their state in a way that they've never had an opportunity to become a part of it before. They are making contacts with adults, and they are making contacts with all kinds of young people outside of their own community and all kinds of adults outside of their own community. And so they're beginning to see for the first time what really makes up the character of their state and the character of the political system of that state. And isn't this really what we want to do, to make make our voters more perceptive about the political system and how you can use that system in a peaceful way to achieve change? And I think Mr. Blumenauer made a very good point in that respect. Now, I'd like to go back to some of my experiences in campaigning on the 19-year-old vote. And this is why I think you should bring this thing to a vote again. I debated, and I spoke before a great many groups, mostly in the Portland area. And those who were opposed to the 19-year-old vote, in most instances, let me say about 60% of them at least, seemed to me to be uptight about what had been happening on the campuses. And this was the main thing that seemed to be determining their attitude toward the 19-year-old vote. Since that time, I think there has been quite a change. I think last week's Time magazine talked about the cooling off of the country. I think the attitude of the people would be somewhat different this time toward giving the 18-year-old the vote. Furthermore, I agree completely with Mr. Blumenauer that another election campaign would be a very desirable thing. And it would be so because when we campaigned on the 19-year-old vote, I'm sure a number of young people must have had their eyes open in a way that no other kind of activity would have opened them about the establishment, because they found people in the establishment with all different kinds of points of view on this thing, and they found people in the establishment willing to commit a good deal of money to the campaign, and they found some who wouldn't, and they began to understand the reason. And they found out that the establishment was not a monolithic kind group of people with the same kind of thinking, but that they varied in their political thought, they varied in their attitudes about this particular issue, all over the map. So for the first time, they were seeing the true character of the political system and the politics and the people of this state. Not only that, but the adults for the first time were seeing young people as they really were, and not as a kind of myth that came out of the popular literature and the newspapers and the magazines of the day. And I'm not indicting the press, because I am a former newsman. I am not indicting the press when I say this, but we cannot, even with all the media we have today, present on any issue or any group of people as they really are because we lack space and time to do so. And besides, it takes the personal contact that a person acquires in this kind of activity to really see this kind of character that makes up our state, the character of our politics and the character of our people. So I think another election campaign would be a very, very good thing for this state, not only for young people, but for adults as well.
We appreciate very, very much your coming, Irv.
Just one thing, Mr. Luton, and I too share your enthusiasm, and I also shared your activities in the campaign as I spoke at Eastern Oregon College and the high schools in the area. In fact, I paid the rent on the Go 19 headquarters in La Grande, Oregon, to try to pass the measure. But I was frankly appalled at the apathy I found with the 19 and those that were disenfranchised and to their lack of motivation in obtaining the franchise. I'm wondering if you found the same thing to any extent at all in your area.
Yes, I think I found this because I think that you would find, even among adult citizenry, about the same amount of apathy on any issue of this kind. I didn't see much difference between this and what I found among adults on some very vital issues.
Rich?
No, I don't have any questions. He answered the question I've got.
We appreciate very much your coming. Anybody else here to testify on this bill that didn't get an opportunity to sign up? Would you like to come forward?
My name's Lethal Kalp. I'm a farmer from out north of town here. I think that the bill should be dumped. I don't think that the 18-year-olds should be allowed to vote, and I'll say why. The majority of these 18-year-olds especially, when they hit 18, are still students in high school, and I do not think they are capable or qualified to pick the propaganda, and I'm saying propaganda that's presented by the schools apart, decide, is this more valuable than that when we hit our budget elections, which will happen about, next month after. Now, the majority of the 18-year-olds at that time will still be in the school. And I have seen it, and seen it again and again amongst the teachers, get these kids to vote. Well, they will try this. Now, in my own school district, there's about 100 seniors, just rough figures. Probably, I imagine 60, 70 of them will be 18 at the time we cast our ballots on the first election. They'll probably get 2/3 of those to vote yes on the bill. I don't care how mock-snicks, how stupid the budget is, how extravagant. They'll still get them to vote on it. Yes. Now, I can't afford to pay that kind, to pay extravagant taxes. I can't afford to pay any more than I have to, because my own personal tax bill in the farming is over $2,000 a year, and that is a lot of cabbage to scrape out of the ground. So I'm saying we should not allow these people to vote until they have done a little journeyman time to get out here, to go away from home, to meet other people, to have these experiences, which the gentleman who said so very well that these kids learned a lot in the Go 19 group got. I think they can get them. I got them in Uncle Sugar's army, if you want to know it. I learned right there that five of us, or how many of us sit here and talk about the same thing, we see it all from a different angle. And we get together, and if we have to, we make a decision. It's a composite of every one of our views. But I learned that in the Army. I think that these kids can do the same thing. I don't say they have to go to the Army, they go to college, They go down here to Joe Blow Corporation and get a job. They'll learn this. But I don't think that they should be, especially the 18-year-olds, should be controlling those purse strings. Because I do not think they can separate the wheat from the chaff of the school propaganda and the other propaganda which we're all going to be throwing at them. And I admit, I throw propaganda out when we get into our school budget fights. Because I say I don't think something is any good. And somebody else says, well, that's the way to do it. So there we have it. There's propaganda.
Are there any questions of Mr. Cole?
You did understand that no matter what this committee does or what this legislature does, that this is something that will be presented on the ballot.
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. I didn't know whether you meant they were going to vote next month or...
No, I understand that. In fact, I'll say it, I voted against the measure when we turned it on the thing. And I personally disagree very strongly with many of the people, unless the people who I have talked to, and they are simply residents of the Salem, general Salem area, that the thing would have gone down in the Salem area considerably, even before the fracas at Kent State, Portland State, etc. Now, this was my personal contact with the people at that time, tradesmen, other farmers, etc., etc.
And, Mr. Kelvin, how many voters do you have in your school district, you know, roughly?
Oh, the great school district is around 250. In the Union High School, I suppose there are probably, well, maybe four times that many. I don't truly know just exactly how many there is in the high school district.
Well, I'll say roughly 1,250 in the two districts.
Well, the two districts, the grade school is part of the high school.
So you have, say, roughly 1,000 then?
Possibly 1,000. I would say this was being guessing as an over guess.
Would you have any idea how many voters you would enfranchise if this would pass the state election?
Well, I'd say there'd probably be about 60, so maybe more high school students. Probably because of the way the district's set up, I really am not able to guess exactly because I do not know the Brooks makeup. But the Jervis and the other areas, probably you wouldn't enfranchise more than maybe, at the most, I'd say 100.
That would be roughly
history.
10% of the total voters that you now have voting. Is that right?
That would be a good healthy say. That is a good yes.
And national statistics indicate that probably if we have 50% of those voting, we would be doing well.
Well, this here we have. On a school election, we'll have over 200, way over 200, usually around 300 on each side when we vote.
Some pretty close elections.
They are very close.
Most school elections are, but the point I was trying to make is that we're talking about whether this number is a significant number that could actually change the outcome of an election.
Well, many times it would, 5-6 votes would be enough to change it. Very significantly.
Has the Farm Bureau taken a stand on this?
I am not a member of the Farm Bureau. I am strictly a lone wolf.
Okay, thank you very much for coming.
You're very welcome.
It.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Lloyd Knudsen, and I'm here representing the Oregon AFL-CIO. I was active as one of the four adult co-chairmen of ballot measure 5, lowering the voting age to 19. Maureen Neuberger, Clay Myers, Don Frisbee, president of PPNL, and myself. And during that time, we talked to many, many people, many, many union members. And of the 140,000 people that the Oregon AFL-CIO represents, we found in no case that was there a single union or council. And we have roughly 700 of these individual units, that was against Go 19, or lowering the voting age at that time. We did pass and have a mandate at our convention endorsing ballot measure 5, and we did support Earl Blumenauer. We traveled throughout different areas attempting to show our union members that their children should have the right to vote. We're in a different era. We are more cognizant of the world problems than we were at 21, which is a mythical age. And it seems funny to me that at no time can I ever remember an apprentice or a young individual, say a waitress or other young people that get into different unions, have we ever denied these young people the right to vote on the contract, deny them the right to vote on a strike issue? Did we ever deny them the right to vote on a pension program or health and welfare? In other words, what I'm saying, their livelihood, their jobs, they had a right to vote whether the member was 60 or whether he was 17. And it seems to me when you go out in the cruel world after you make a living that you do not have the right to vote on a judge that could send you to jail. You do not have the right to vote on you people's elections, that they have to abide by the laws, that of all the bias and all the things that people claim about unions, that we do have a democracy there, that I feel that it must make a difference if we allow this to happen in our structure, to vote on the business agent right on down the line. And it works. It works well. I haven't seen a huge takeover of all the young people showing up at a union meeting and try to vote down pensions for the older people because they wouldn't receive the pension for a long period of time, which you would think could happen. As a matter of fact, all in all, I've found an energetic bunch of enthusiastic young adults. When they do become a union member, they try to learn the bylaws, the Constitution, the agreement, and I think they're pretty good citizens, by and large. And I think probably they're more attentive, and with that we have more problem with the more callous, the older person that takes life and takes all of the conditions for granted, rather than seeing what he can do to help make the whole structure progress. And if we believe in apprentices and we believe in the future of America, we should believe in the training process, starting at 18 years of age, so that if the trend is that they have been voting now at 26 to 30, that we would at least lower this, maybe 21 to 24 you would find the young people exercising their right to vote. I know this has happened in Canada and some of the provinces. It happened in Hawaii. In Hawaii, I think the voting age was 20, and then they have lowered it to 18 statewide because it did work well. The young people did not see fit to vote in swimming pools and tennis courts and golf courses and all the kinds of things that young people might like, racetracks and et cetera. And in these states, I think they're happy with the young people. And so on behalf of the Oregon AFL-CIO and the labor movement, I would like to give our endorsement to whatever consideration and deliberation you gentlemen would make up there.
Thank you, Mr. Knudsen. Ed? I guess there are no questions.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen.
Is there anybody else? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lyle Blanchard. I'm a legislative liaison officer of the American Legion. And I would like to endorse this bill, too. The Legion is noted for its work amongst the young people. And one of my jobs has been with the Legion, the selecting of boys for Boys State. Formerly, I was a sheriff in the Los Angeles County Jail, and I met the other side of the paper. The young people that I have talked to up here and have worked with, both in baseball and in the Boys State, I would say that we have nothing to fear in their vote. They're, at their age, and their knowledge of the political situation and the worldwide situation is far beyond anything that I knew at their age, far beyond it. Their education has advanced greatly, and I think that they're going to be responsible citizens, and I see no reason why they shouldn't be able to vote now. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any questions?
My name is Marshall Jones. I want to speak in opposition to this. First, I'd like to say I admire and respect these young men that have spoken in favor of this proposition. And I respect more and fear and admire more the professors and teachers that have coached them so well. We had quite a few young people here when this started, but we have none left. They didn't wait till the end of the hearing. I didn't plan to speak, but I don't feel anything should go overwhelmingly one way. And I speak in support of this farmer. I'm not a farmer. I only represent myself, but I feel that there should be more opposition with the things as important as this. Our founding fathers, when they set up this country, they could have given the 18-year-old vote, and at 18, a man was a man in those days. He was on his own. Buffalo Bill at 12 was supporting his mother and his whole family, shooting buffalo and killing buffalo. Many men were on their own at 12, but our founding fathers thought fit to keep the vote from the people, from the youth until they were 21. Now, I will indict the press, and I have watched them and studied them from one end of this country to the other. I do indict them very much for a distortion of the news, a very slanted presentation of the news, and this is what we all are subject to. I'll admit that I very often am confused at my age on who to vote for. I never vote for anyone that has no opposition. Never. And I see very little choice between most of the opposition, of the politicians that run in opposition to each other. I don't see any difference between one party and the other, really. But these kids are sincere and very dedicated, these boys that are working here. But so also were the children in the Children's Crusade in the Middle Ages that went to rescue the Holy Grail. They also were sincere and dedicated. We have many stories like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. Now, we have demagogues. The word demagogue came from the word democracy, and it's a man that can lead the people. We have many demagogues in this country. My personal opinion of who they were would probably differ with everybody else in this room, but I've made quite a deep study of the political area, both national and local. That's about all I have to say. I'm just in opposition to it. Well, we do not learn the lessons of history. Too often we forget about the past. But the Roman Republic first was established when the senators had no pay. The senators drew no pay. That's going to be all right, isn't it? The senators drew no pay, and only taxpayers voted. But the senators didn't like it that way, so they said, well, let's get us some pay. And the taxpayers aren't going to pay it, so let's expand the franchise. And they gave it to the people, all of the people. Then the people demanded bread. and the senators gave it to him. And they gave it to him, and they gave it to him, and they gave it to him. Now, we've had welfare for 40 years in this country, and we have a worse problem today than we had when we began. Over 12 million people in this country are on welfare. Who's going to cure this? Who's going to cure it, these young kids? Maybe they are. Maybe they will, and I've got a lot of confidence in them. I've talked to them many times, and many things I agree with them completely. I'm opposed very violently to the draft. I'm against the draft. I think we have no business being in Vietnam. And this is something that I can't blame for these young kids for burning their draft cards and revolting and being opposed to the system that we have set on them and take them out of school and shove them into a war that they won't let them win. We've been in that war 10 years, and we've never let them win it. Any thinking person in this country knows we could win that war in a month if we'd go in and win it. But the news media and the propaganda through the schools has convinced them that the only thing we can do is back out with our tail between our legs. I'm opposed to the draft very violently, and we would never have been in that war if there hadn't been a draft. They had to put a draft on us for the First World War, which I realize now we should never have been in. And the Second World War, they had to draft our men for the Second World War. I studied Pearl Harbor. I have four books at home, and anybody in this room's welcome to read them on Pearl Harbor. And it was arranged, completely arranged. Churchill went back to the Parliament in England a year previous to Pearl Harbor and told the Parliament that he would get America into the war through the back door of the Pacific. Well, after Pearl Harbor, we needed no draft. We had volunteers. But just 1 minute, can I just finish and I'll be through. Going back to the Roman Republic, when the people were revolting in the streets because they couldn't give them any more bread, people turned out in the streets in revolution and revolt. And they called the army in. They had never in Rome allowed a general of the army to come into Rome with his army. He came in and presented his sword to the senators and took a year's leave. His army was still out in the provinces. But they called this general in to put down the revolution. He put down the revolution, all right. And he came before the Senate, and they thanked him profusely. They said, "General, you've saved Rome." He said, "Gentlemen, I think you have the name wrong. It's not general, it's emperor." And that was the beginning of the Roman, not republic, but the Roman Empire. I thank you.
We appreciate very much, Mr. Jones, your coming. You didn't tell us where you live.
Here in Marion County.
Ed? Rich? Thank you very much, sir.
I thank you.
If nobody else to be heard, this closes the hearing on whatever we're hearing. Senate Joint.
Talking that I think you'll find it's not near as good as quality as it was the other.